So now in the Innovation Show, we welcome James Corbett, CEO and founder of Sim Virtua and CEO and founder of 3D Camp. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Aidan.
Good to have you here, man. And I saw a YouTube video of you giving a talk and it was brilliant. Where was it again? Limerick, was it?
That one of the universities. In the Gaeltacht, I think. The one in Galway, perhaps.
That's it, yeah. I just thought that your explanation of VR and AR and the journey that we've all been on, and it was brilliant. Your background and understanding of this started very, very early with seeing the movie Disclosure.
Yeah, God, yeah, I did. I suppose that was probably the first time, really, Aidan, that I heard the term virtual reality. I suppose a lot of people in tech are aware of or would have been interested in the concept prior to that in the likes of Star Trek and the holodeck on Star Trek, which was this room that you used to walk into and you tell the computer to run a program and it could simulate whatever type of environment you wanted to be in. So that was the same concept, but the term virtual reality I mightn't have heard, I guess, until the film Disclosure came out, and I got the book for Disclosure before that, because I remember reading a review in a computer magazine, and it wasn't so much talking about the plot of the movie Disclosure as talking about this amazing concept of virtual reality, and I just had to get that book then. So yeah, it really goes back to then, and I was kind of just fascinated, I think, always by the idea of being able to kind of transport yourself in place and time with digital technology.
Your early foray into VR and the VR world was more of an education one.
It was, yeah. I mean, I suppose I remember we started, well, I started doing kind of on a voluntary basis, just IT support for a local Gael school, and that's in Newcastle West in County Limerick. And I think around 2009 that was. And it was just, there was a really inspiring, I have to say, principal there called Dahi Omuruku, just a really kind of forward thinker in terms of the application of technology to education. And, you know, they had a new school there at the time that all the interactive whiteboards and broadband and laptops, anything you could wish for in a primary school. And yet he wasn't satisfied that they were teaching any better or any differently to what they always did using this technology. So he used to be saying to me, you know, James, you know, is there any better way that we could be applying this technology to just teach kids better? And I suppose I was kind of aware, or I'd been dabbling in to a degree, Second Life for a few years at that stage. And you might remember that one. Yeah. And it was kind of one of the first virtual worlds, I think, from about 2002. So it goes way back. And it always fascinated me, but I was never really fully drawn into it, because I remember thinking, like, if we could wear a headset, a virtual reality headset, and be really in this place, it would just be so much more powerful. But really, Second Life was what you call a virtual world. So it was like an open-ended, kind of a sandbox world. And I think people wouldn't understand that better nowadays when they see the likes of Minecraft. And that's the real power of Minecraft, what all the kids are into, is that it's kind of like a digital Lego. And it gives kids the power to create their own digital creation.
Their own world. Yeah, my son's just got into it. Yeah. Josh, like, he's fascinated by it. And just, you know, Dad, I built a house and I put a roof in it. And, you know, but it's great because it's building, it's creation.
Exactly. So they're not just consuming a game. They're kind of producing their own content. It's much more creative. So yeah, so that was kind of what we were trying to do, or we saw that we could do perhaps at the school at the time, because there was an open source version of Second Life called Open Simulator. And we were able to bring that into the school, and, you know, we let the kids at it for a while, and they did just incredible stuff. They created their own scavenger hunts, learning content, kind of quizzes.
Wow. You know?
So that's what we saw, I guess, the potential of in the school, and the kids kind of confirmed that, and the teachers loved it. And really, you know, we thought, look, this idea is too good to be just here at this school. Let's see if we could maybe take it to other schools. And that, at that time, myself and a friend went to Social Entrepreneurs Ireland with that idea. And, you know, that's a great organization based here in Dublin that supports people that have ideas that mightn't necessarily be, you know, suitable for a for-profit business, but at the same time could do potentially a lot of social good. And they supported us to see what we could do with that. And we actually joined forces then at the time with another person who was going through the Social Entrepreneurs Program, Mrs. Margaret Keane. And she was the founder of an organization called Gifted Kids, a really great organization to support parents of children, which are what they call twice exceptional, in the sense that these kids are very, very intelligent, but often have a lot of learning difficulties to go along with that. So great organization. And Margaret understood the potential of gaming, because her own kids made really strong connections online, even though they might have found it difficult to form friendships.
Wow. In person.
In the school and in person, let's say. And she'd seen that with a lot of these kids, and formed very strong bonds online through playing the likes of Eve online and gaming, multi-user gaming like that, let's say. So we joined forces with Margaret, and I remember we went to the Department of Education, and in fairness to them, they got it. They really understood what we were trying to do, and they supported us then to run a program in the schools for 1 year, and that was with 20 schools. And I have to say, like, there was a lot of really, you know, incredibly positive things came out of that. I think nearly every one of the teachers, to a person, like, thought it was a really great way of for the kids to express themselves, to be creative. But interestingly, it was a lot of the kids who would have had other, you know, social difficulties or learning difficulties, that there was some really strong stories came back about, you know, how well it suited their learning.
Yeah, because there's a huge opportunity there, isn't there, in the immersive opportunities to learn, because, you know, you can read as much as you want or be dictated to, but when you're immersed in it, that learning is just totally different dynamic.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I think the kids like gaming. All kids like gaming. I mean, how many kids do you know that don't like some type of gaming or playing games? So there's kind of what we saw was that there was room for a kid of every aptitude really to express themselves or to participate. So just to give you one example, there was a school in County Offaly, a little two-teacher school, wonderful little rural school, and they were quite close to Clonmacnoise. So they undertook the project to create a virtual Clonmacnoise, and it was fantastic. Wow. What they did. But there was room there for kids of every aptitude. Like, there was the kids who were kind of mathematically inclined or artistically, you know, there was architecture involved. Yeah. And kind of recreating the monastery. There was, you know, role play. There was, we needed a script writer and a director to, wow, kind of direct, if you like, their own Toy Story type of an animated feature based around the Clonmacnoise that they had created. So you kind of name it, and any subject, if you like, that's been taught in primary school, geography, history, the same, maths, English, they all fit into that scenario that the kids created for themselves.
Yeah. And what year was that?
That was 2011.
Wow. Yeah, so you're still ahead of when, you know, became popular again, if you will.
Yeah.
So what was the next step then?
The next step then was, unfortunately, the Department of Education were going through some changes at the time. So the unit of the department that funded that program wasn't around to refund it for a second year. And we kind of learned the hard way that you know, even when the teachers and the kids and the parents love something, it doesn't necessarily mean that there's money in the schools to pay for this stuff. So unfortunately, it didn't seem like there was a way to make it a viable entity, the not-for-profit. And we decided, sadly, to wind down the not-for-profit and to reboot then as a for-profit company, which we call SimVirtua Limited. And the idea is, even though, you know, we've kind of parked, if you like, the education, the primary and secondary education side of things, that all that stuff is sitting on a server somewhere in LIT. And we'd love to find a way to run that as a viable business. But really, we've had to look more so towards enterprise type applications.
So if there was a chance, look, because if some VCs listen to the show, that is something that if you got funding for that, you'd like to restart or reboot.
You know, I think we'd have to, like,
possibly, as a for-profit though.
Yeah, for-profit. Yeah. But I guess I would have to say that Minecraft has probably come along in the meantime and stepped in to fill. You know, really any not-for-profit or any charity should be aiming to put itself out of business.
Yeah.
In the sense that you're trying to solve a social problem.
True, true.
And, you know, maybe it's the case that Minecraft has kind of solved that problem now.
Yeah, I remember when Microsoft bought Minecraft, people were like, that's crazy. That's crazy money. Mm-hmm. I remember going, that's genius, because it's a piece of the pie of the ecosystem. Yeah. It's like Apple with iTunes when they launched the iPod, because they're like, the iPod without having a music ecosystem isn't great. Yeah. And they're like, well, we're going to build the ecosystem and we'll build every slice of the pie. And then you own that, your monopoly, essentially. And yeah, podcasting, everything Apple thought of. Like, it was just, I love that piece of Apple thinking. But yeah, Microsoft, and they're great second movers, I think, Microsoft. They sit back and they might be late and they might miss something. They might miss a cycle. But then they'll capitalize because I suppose they have enough capital to do so.
Yeah. I remember tweeting at the time, and I'm not saying I'm any kind of a futurist, but I said that, you know, I see this when Microsoft bought Minecraft, I see this as their VR play.
Yeah.
And it did happen that they made a big deal of that with their HoloLens demos later on. But I think it was kind of an obvious fit for VR and AR. And you're right, like, you know, and Microsoft's gotten a lot of stick over the years, but there's no doubt about it. They're really leading the pack, that the charge now with a true, really a mixed reality headset as opposed to an augmented reality headset.
Yeah.
You know, where it kind of crosses over between VR and AR, and the two of them are mixed in together.
Yeah. And like, regarding your futurist thing, you were, though. I mean, you were blogging before Twitter. And we talked about before, I think you should restart that bad boy, because and I know it takes a lot of time, but certainly, like, your stuff back then, you were ahead of the game, you know.
I regret in a way, like, I suppose I started blogging around 2002 perhaps, and it was a small community back at in the day, and I guess most Irish bloggers kind of knew each other, and there was almost a kind of a camaraderie, and, you know, most people left comments on other people's blogs. But yeah, there was a discipline involved in writing a blog post, like, you know yourself, and it takes a long time, but it kind of forces you to be, I guess, rigorous. And that's not necessarily there with Twitter. And I got lazy about blogging once Twitter came along, which I shouldn't. I'd like to get going with it again, because a friend of mine actually had a great phrase a few years ago, and he said that blogging is a way of bringing yourself to the table.
Yeah.
And that, I think what he meant by that was that you can, you know, if you express yourself in a certain way, you can show a certain authority, and you don't have to kind of, you know, pretend you're any kind of an expert in something, but you can often bring yourself into discussions, really interesting discussions out of that.
I did. Well, I mean, my own thought on the blog I do is purely, it's a great way to learn. Like, I mean, you have to research the subject, and I mean, that's probably where most of the time is.
Yeah,
is actually, you know, and then you have to go a little bit deeper than just, you know, here's my opinion, see you later. And you have to actually kind of research that and kind of think about it. And you know what I love about it actually is you cut out the crap, and you're just going to go, no, I'm not going to, that's crap. I'm just filling. I don't need to fill, because nobody has time anymore.
Yeah, it does. It certainly forces you to be more rigorous. Like you do. You often start out with a thought, an idea, and as you start writing it, you kind of realize, well, you know, maybe am I sure about that?
Yeah. It's like an MVP in a way, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's like
exactly.
Straw man. Nah. No, it's not working. Yeah,
good analogy.
But because, you know, you said about the blogging and the community, and you were early 2002, but you were also early with camps. I mean, 3D Camp is one of your meetups, and you were an early meetup guy.
Yeah, we were. I remember, like, the bar camp scene was interesting for a while, I guess around 2008 or 7. I'm not too sure when it started, but it was a thing that came out of, I guess, was it a European guy called Saul Klein, as far as I remember, was kind of pushing it in Europe. But it was a kind of a backlash, I guess, to a lot of expensive paid conferencing, you know, at the time. And there was this idea that we can get, you know, a bunch of geeks together for this, you know, free thing to enter, and people just come along on the day, and they proposed topics to speak about. And that was the basis of Barcamp. I think when it was introduced to Ireland, they had to put a little bit more structure on it, because people weren't great at maybe volunteering to speak about things on the day. But certainly for a couple of years, like, I think Cork was the first one, Barcamp Cork, and then there was ones in Dublin, and I guess Limerick. And then they started getting a bit more specialised. There was a Biz Camp in Limerick, and I think there was a Creative Camp in Kilkenny. And I remember then myself and a lecturer in UL called Gabriella Avram, great girl down there. She's lecturing in multimedia. And we were very interested in, I guess, the kind of looking beyond. Web 2.0 was the big thing. Mm. I remember that phrase. You couldn't escape it like back there. And it was a bit, you know, Web 2.0 was all about web-based applications. And we were kind of more interested in looking beyond the flat, if you like, the flat web and things like 3D printing, which was emerging. And augmented reality, it was very basic at the time, but it was there. And so, yeah, that was the basis. It was very specialized, I guess. And that was 2008. We had the first.
That's very early. Yeah.
It was quite early. We had the first 3D camp in 2008 in UL. And it ran as an annual conference for a good few years. And then I guess nearly 2 years ago, we decided, look, things are just happening too quick here to let it just be an annual conference. So we started kind of, if you like, meetup groups and chapters. Mm. So there was 3D Camp Limerick. There's a Dublin one now, is really going strong.
Like, I mean, is that all voluntary? You don't get any sponsoring on that or anything?
No, we like to keep that free. So it's free to attend and people don't get paid to speak. So it's all voluntary. And that's a great way to have it.
Yeah.
And we're just very, very lucky to have Paul Power. Big thumbs up to Paul at Workday there, and Workday are great to support. And we've been very lucky. We've had the likes of Google and Daiquiri have supported us in the past. Yeah. Workday have a fantastic office there in Smithfield, so it's a really great event.
And would you look for a sponsor on it?
No, I think we prefer to keep it pure, man. Don't bring money into the equation if possible. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And so I digressed away from SimVirtua. So where were we? 2011.
Yeah. Well, as I said, unfortunately, we had to wind that down eventually. And
this is pre-SimVirtua. So then SimVirtua was born.
SimVirtua was born out of that.
Phoenix from the ashes.
Out of the ashes, hopefully. Yeah, so like, and again, this kind of has coincided now then with the emergence of, finally, the VR headsets. You know, it's not like we knew for sure the VR headsets were going to come fairly soon in 2009, I guess, or 8, or whenever we started, but it was obvious at the same time that they were going to, the technology was going to rebound again after having disappeared for, let's say, 20 years from the time those movies were coming out. And so, yeah, you know, we weren't about to give up on the idea. It was obvious to us that there was going to be a real blossoming of potential and opportunity in augmented and virtual reality. And thankfully, Oculus came out with the Oculus Rift. And then Facebook bought them, and suddenly everyone was like paying attention. And then the HTC Vive came along from Steam. And now Microsoft is, you know, doing the HoloLens. So it's starting to become a really, really interesting field. And we're talking to a lot of really interesting people in terms of, you know, enterprise and industrial applications.
Brilliant. And because I remember experiencing the Vive, and I was like, oh my God. I remember, you know, the application where you can paint. I'm just kind of going, this is amazing. Like you know, there's a video on YouTube about the
Tilt Brush, is it?
Yeah,
yeah.
And he's an artist from Disney.
Yeah,
who, you know,
that's incredible.
Beauty and the Beast, and he's doing it in real life. And he said, "This is changing the game because I'm actually, that's how my mind does it anyway, except it's on a page."
Yeah.
And he's building them like, because I just thought it was fascinating how he explained so well that when he writes on the page, he's thinking of them in life size. But now he can paint them in life size.
That's right. That's
a mind blower.
Incredible. That's Glenn Keane, I think, was the guy's name. He's like a legend of
animator. Yeah, yeah.
And Disney. Yeah, it was very interesting for me to hear, like, because you'd think somebody who's or drawing in 2D all his life that would be the way he'd do it. But no, as you say, it was the idea. He's always been thinking about these characters as three dimensional. Mm. And when you see it, there's such a kind of a physical choreography to drawing. It's almost like he's sculpting with a pen.
Mm.
Which it's like a totally new capability that we have now to draw in 3D and just give that alone to kids in an educational context and let them at it, and you can imagine the incredible stuff that they could produce.
Because I with my boy, the two lads, my sons, I've given them like the odd. Josh is into like rollercoaster. He's a speed freak, and you can, you know, give him the 360 view in the YouTube stuff, and he's like, "This is awesome, Dad." And, you know, you can give him, you can bring it to him. But the difference there is it's not interactive. Like, he could build that. And, like, you know, in the future, he can build his own roller coaster, design it the way he wants, design the experience. And, like, if you bring Minecraft and that together, you're just going to go, the future for that world is fantastic. Which leads me to this question. The clients, because there's kind of a lot of hype around VR and AR at the moment, but I don't see a lot of action. And I don't see, it's kind of like the early days of web where, you know, you're lucky to get an enterprise client earlier who may give you enough runway to keep the company going.
Mm.
And, you know, there's a lot of talk, but not a lot of action around stuff. And, you know, I know Vulture Ireland did some great work with the Wild Atlantic Way, and Sherry Fitz with the, you know, bringing new builds to you in a virtual. I think that's great uses of it. And it'd be great to see more companies getting on board early. And I'm sure from your perspective, you know, you'd want to get, you know, a little kick up the backside for some companies, just, you know, to get things going and get in touch.
Oh, of course, yeah, and it has been kind of slow. I think, you know, unfortunately, we're to a degree, we are laggards in this country again, because you're seeing a lot of people jumping on board now in the States and the UK and so on. But it is starting to happen. People are starting to get it. So, like, we did a workshop there for architects a few months ago in Dublin. There was a lot of interest. So, I mean, you know, architects, there's no reason. We were showing them how to create their own virtual reality. And it's not that difficult for someone to use the likes of Unity game engine to bring in models. Like, all the architects are using
SketchUp. They're doing it anyway, aren't
SketchUp.
They?
Exactly. Yeah. They're creating their own stuff in SketchUp. Yeah. And it's not that difficult to go the next step, put it into Unity game engine and produce a version of it on a phone that you can then see through a cardboard headset.
Mm.
And, like, I think they were really, you know, initially they were really surprised that it could be that accessible.
Sorry to interrupt. I just... While we're on it, where do you see, so for people listening here to you know, pick up the phone, pick up the email, pick up the mouse and get in touch, what kind of industry, I know it's a very broad question, like how many industries can get in touch, but right now, like, what kind of stuff are you kind of going, this is staring in the face of X industry or Y industry?
Yeah, I think the kind of the more obvious, I'll call them, industries are the ones where people are already doing stuff in 3D. So this is like construction, architecture, you know, the engineering, all these CAD programs that are creating stuff in three dimensionals, in 3D, but on flat screens. You know, it makes no sense.
I know, it's nuts.
Finally, we're there where we can actually create that stuff in proper 3D and virtual reality. So they're going to jump on. They are jumping on.
3D printing as well. Anything in 3D printing.
Exactly. Actually, anything is going to be output in 3D. Yeah, 3D print as well. So that's kind of more the more obvious ones. And they'll be forced. They'll jump on board very, very quickly. They are doing so. I think maybe the less obvious ones, and there's a lot of interesting stuff in the wake of that then, is the likes of, you know, health and safety. So we've been talking to, for example, we've been talking to large utilities about doing health and safety training. And they have situations there where guys in the field, you know, ideally they should be training guys in to do something in the field, but it can be like too dangerous, too expensive, or just too disruptive to actually train people in reality. And then the other alternative is traditionally just to do that in the classroom scenario where they're looking at a video or writing something down on a whiteboard. And you can imagine that's just not a proper alternative, because there's a real choreography, a kind of a physical choreography involved in terms of people needing understanding how to move if an emergency situation happens, and what their colleagues and people around them are doing. So obviously, it's very obvious then when you kind of explain it in those terms that the next best alternative obviously is to do that in virtual reality. And so we're starting to see some real, I think, excitement in that sense. It's getting a whole lot easier to model things in 3D too. And you've seen there's almost like a convergence to a degree of drone technology now with VR, in the sense of sending drones up to do capture what's called photogrammetry, which is catching a lot of photographs of something, a structure, let's say, while you're flying around that structure. And then the software can put all those photographs together and create the 3D model of the building. So that's been used in the likes of construction as well as cultural heritage and things like that. And like, it's getting, you know, there's so many of these industries are converging now, these technologies. Another good example there, I guess, is there's an Irish company called Movidius, which is doing really pioneering work with a chip that's a major part of the Google Tango project, which is just starting to be called Tango now, because it's in one of the new phablets. I don't know if it's the Lenovo or the LG. One of the new phones has eventually going to have this chip in it, which will allow you to use your phone to capture depth information. Do you remember, like, the Kinect camera?
Yeah.
So it's going to be like a Kinect camera to a degree in your phone, which will allow you to walk into, let's say, into a room, and you're capturing a 3D model of that room as you're walking around. So you can imagine then, like, that
game changer.
Yeah, it is a game changer. You're going to have 3D models of everywhere you go, literally. And why not then, you know, see those in virtual reality?
Is that what Movidius is doing? Yeah,
Movidius, and they're a real pioneer. I think they're kind of not recognized enough for the pioneering work they're doing there.
They're from the Dublin BIC, aren't they? I think so, yeah. Fantastic. Yeah. So What's next then for SimVirtua?
Well, it's like one of the challenges really is kind of to focus, and what we really want to do, I guess, is talk with more domain experts, you know, people in construction and in retail, people who see real potential in virtual reality, and we'd like to, I guess, you know, partner with those and eventually productize then. So we're not in a rush, I guess, at the moment, Aiden, to productize. We want to be sure that we're going to build something, you know, that has some real potential.
Has a market.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, we'll talk to anybody who's an idea for AR or VR. Please come and have a chat.
Okay, and where can they reach you, Jay?
They can reach us on Twitter at SimVirtua. So it's SimVirtua and it's SimVirtua.com. Or james@simvirtua.com.
And then 3dcamp.
And that's at 3dcamp.eu or at 3dcamp on Twitter as well.
Okay, well, James Corbett, CEO and founder of SimVirtua and 3dcamp, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Aiden.